It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
Last week was a wild and crazy Friday night, turned into a crazy Saturday as well. Didn't have the star power that we had playing last week with Washington State falling to Cal and Clemson falling to Syracuse, but we had local teams playing. Well, they were playing out of state. Air Force went to Nevada to take on the Wolfpack, and it was a crazy, crazy game with the Air Force Falcons ending up winning it 45-42. How'd they win it? Well, they won it on the foot of Luke Strebel with a field goal with no time left on the clock to a 30-yarder to win the game. He said he hit the ball, saw it was going in, like a nice fairway drive where you just reach down and pick up the tee. I know I've had one or two of those in my lifetime, not a lot of them, but nice win for the Air Force Falcons. How they do it, they might have done it on his foot, but it was built upon the legs of a slew of runners who set a team record with 91 carries. They ran the ball 91 times. 91 plays in a ball game is impressive enough, but running the ball 91 times, that's even more impressive. And you had three people go over 100 yards for only the second time in program history. Of course, touchdown Tim McVay, 18 carries, 139 yards. A slot receiver had 8 carries for 118. That's Roland Cleveland. And sophomore fullback Taven Bernow had 20 carries for 100 yards. Like I said, only the second time in program history that they did that with three rushers. They almost had 4. Arion Werthmann had 20 carries for 92 yards. They tied the program mark by running 98 total plays. The Falcons held the ball for 41 and a half minutes. That is crazy time of possession. It's hard to win if you don't have the ball, but New Mexico made the most of it when they did have the ball, just scoring at will against that Air Force defense. You're going to have to shore that up because they got a big game next week in the Mountain West. But as it is, they won 45-42, last-second field goal by Luke Strebel. Good job by the Air Force Falcons. Who are they playing next week? They're playing Colorado State. Colorado State was in Albuquerque last night, taking on New Mexico. Colorado State quietly coming into the game at 5-2. You think about the two losses, the opening game against Colorado in the Rocky Mountain Showdown, where they weren't only playing the Buffs, they were also playing the Zebras. I mean, it was like there was so many people out there against the Rams. They had to fight the officials all game long against Colorado. And of course, their other loss coming up to a monster performance by Alabama, just wiping up Colorado State. That's their only two losses. They're 4-0 in the Mountain West Conference, two games clear of anybody else. And how they do it last night, they won 27-24. This one went down to the last seconds as well. Nick Stevens threw for 2 touchdowns in Colorado State's 21-point second quarter, and the Rams defense forced a fourth quarter turnover in the 27-24 victory last night. Colorado State linebacker Patrick Elzenbast forced a fumble ball. New Mexico Richard McCourty, the running back and defensive lineman Jacob Byes, made the recovery, and then the Rams went on a 5-minute drive, capped off by Wyatt Bryan's 52-yard field goal with only 5:05 left in the fourth quarter. Now, New Mexico made it look good because Aaron Molina had a 12-yard touchdown catch with only 24 seconds left, getting the Lobos within 3. And so you're going, okay, here we go again. The Lobos did kick an onside. Of course, you have to. You're down 3. They did recover it. But that all ended when the birthday boy, Evan Corralito, for the Rams, sacked Tui Adi on 4th-and-4 near midfield to seal the victory for Colorado State. So great win for them. Like I said, they're 2 games clear of anybody in the Mountain West Mountain Division, and who they're up on right now is Boise State and Wyoming. So, you know, they've got Air Force coming in next week in that brand new stadium up there in Fort Collins. Air Force will be looking for its third Mountain West division win, and that will put them over 500, sitting at 2-2 right now, 3-4 on the season. They're riding a two-game winning streak. Hey, you know, you got to take the small victories this year, especially when you're Air Force, because you've played some really tough games. Tough game against Navy, really tough game in tough conditions against San Diego State, and of course, that game up in the Big House against Michigan, where they fell a little bit short. Should be a great matchup this next week in Fort Collins, there at the new stadium at Colorado State. You'll hear that game on our sister station, 740 KVOR. Make sure you tune in for that after my show. Of course, you got to listen to this first, but then make sure you tune in to KVOR for Air Force, Colorado State. It's going to be a great game, but we got to talk about what's going to happen today. Coming up on the show today, we've got Colorado traveling to Washington to take on Washington State. Washington State still licking their chops, wanting to get back on the field after that 37-3 loss to Cal last week. Luke Falk will not have the game he had last week. 7 turnovers in the game for Washington State. You can't expect to win if you're going to do that, and I don't think they'll do it today against Colorado. We'll be talking to Neil Welk, who writes on Colorado each and every day. He knows that team better than anybody else. We'll be talking to him. Then we'll also talk to Ryan Abraham as he travels up to South Bend, Indiana. Yes, USC Notre Dame. It's pretty much a playoff elimination game. Whoever loses this game has no chance of being in the college football playoffs because USC already has the one loss to Washington State. We already have Notre Dame with the loss to Georgia. Yeah, Georgia's playing lights out, but whoever loses this game, a second loss is not going to help them at all to get into the college football playoff. And then, of course, we have the biggest game of the week, that being Michigan, Penn State. That's going to be played in Happy Valley. They're in State College, 100,000 plus, all wearing white. Be a great game. We'll be talking to the angel of the Big House, Angelique Shengelis. You've heard her a few times on the show. We're going to have to make her a full professor. I've already told her she's an adjunct. We're going to make her a full professor sometime soon, probably when she sends me her book on Jim Harbaugh Man. But we'll also be talking to Matt Martell. Matt Martell is a writer for the State Collegian, the student paper there at Penn State. He'll be joining us as well, and we might even see if we can get another college kid picking games. You know, gambling on campus is a huge thing. It's really not. I mean, well, I did when I was in school, but we'll be talking to him as well. He'll be our guest picker as well this week. That's all coming up here on University of Fish. When we come back, we'll be joined by Neil Welk from the Daily Camera up in Boulder to talk some CU, Washington State. That's coming up here on the University of Fish. I am the professor. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
Now, not a whole lot of big games in the Pac-12 this week with USC going to Notre Dame. That kind of takes a little bit of the luster off the schedule, but a very good game, which could be, especially after what we saw last week, would be Colorado-Washington State. We're now joined by Neil Welk. Neil, how you doing today? And are the Buffs going to pull off the same kind of upset that Cal did last week?
You know, I would hesitate to go that far because I don't think anybody's going to go in and sack Luke Falk 9 times and force 7 turnovers in back-to-back weeks. I just can't imagine Mike Leach's team doing that. But I do think, you know, I think they got Colorado got a little bit of a blueprint on how to at least disrupt Luke Falk in the pocket and maybe force some mistakes. So I think, you know, I like Colorado's chances going up there. The weather's going to be just horrific. They say it's 100% chance of rain and temperatures in about the low 40s and high winds. So that can't be good for Luke Falk. I Philip Lindsay doesn't care what whether he's running the football in, so I kind of like, you know, that's got to help Colorado a little bit.
It does, and, you know, cold temperatures, precipitation, wind, it sounds a lot like Boulder.
Although we've had, you know, today at 70 degrees up here, they were outside practicing, and it was a gorgeous day. But, Yeah, I think it's an interesting matchup just because Washington State has to have a win if they're going to stay, you know, in the hunt for a Pac-12 North title and stay in the hunt for, you know, even a long shot for the CFP. So they're going to be, you know, ready to go with a late night game up there. Their stadium is, has a great crowd, but, you know, Colorado, I think, getting a win last week, even though in the manner that it came last couple of minutes, I think they've got a little bit of confidence and they need a win. So, you know, I think it has a good chance of being a good game.
Well, what are three things that Colorado has to do when they're on offense? Because we know about Washington State's defense. I mean, we know about their offense, which was shut down last week by Cal. But what do they have to do on offense? Because Cal got a lot of points on them last week.
Yeah, and I think on offense, Colorado has to run the ball downhill. They've got to get Phillip Lindsay going. The kid has just been a monster the last couple of weeks, 466 yards, five touchdowns in the last two games, and he's done it the hard way. I mean, he's carried the ball almost 70 times in those games, and I think they have to do that right away, establish a running game, kind of, you know, if you will, deal a few body blows to that Washington State defense, and then just get into a rhythm. That does two things. Number one, it keeps Luke Falk off the field. If Phillip Lindsay's running the ball and moving the chains, Luke Falk, you know, can't help from the sidelines. So, and then it also, you know, it shortens the game to a degree, gives Colorado some clock control. So number one, they've got to get Phillip Lindsay running the ball. Number two, they've got to get Steven Montez on track a little earlier than he did last week. Steven did not have a first good couple quarters, but the Colorado quarterback came back in the fourth quarter, was 8 for 10, 68 yards, two touchdowns, had a very, very nice fourth quarter. You'd like to see him get into that rhythm a little sooner than waiting until the fourth quarter. And then, you know, they can't do any of those things if their offensive line doesn't have a good night. And again, the last couple of weeks, Colorado's offensive line has played very well in the second half, has struggled a little bit in the first half. So they need to get some cohesive play going on in a hurry. And that will include stopping Washington State's defensive lineman, Hercules Mata'afa. And Hercules leads the league in quarterback sacks, tackles for loss, and as far as I'm concerned, he leads the league in the best name in the conference.
Hercules, he's got one of the best ones.
So those are the three things I think they have to do offensively.
Now, let's flip the field. When they're on defense, what do they got to do to stop Falk?
You know, as weird as this is going to sound, I think they have to stop Washington State's running game early. They've got to force Washington State into some second and third and longs. And as I was watching the Cal film from last week, Cal and Washington State, that's what they were very effective at doing. They forced Washington State into second and long and third long into obvious passing situations. And what that does is forces Luke Falk to stand in the pocket a little bit longer. He has to wait a little bit longer for his routes, for the pass routes to develop, has to wait a little bit longer to get an open receiver. And then that gives your defense time to get to him and force him off of his spot, make him make some mistakes. Now, last week, it might have been the worst game of his career, five interceptions and also a fumble. One of his fumbles was returned for a touchdown. I don't think Colorado's going to match that, but if they can stop that run game early, force them into second and long and third and long, then all of a sudden you've got a little bit different dynamic. So I think that's the number one thing. Number two, they've got to cover. They've got to be able to play good man-to-man defense because Luke Falk gets that ball out of his hands so quickly. He hits receivers in a hurry. He takes that shotgun snap, boom, and he's looking for a receiver. So they have to play good press coverage. They can't, you know, give any cushion at all on those guys. And then, you know, number three, make sure you don't get hurt by the tight end, or make sure you don't get hurt by the running back coming out of the backfield. And they've done that a little bit. So those would be the three things on defense.
Well, it's going to be a great game later tonight, late night out in the Pac-12, like they always like doing. Hey, stay up till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning and watch a football game and on the West Coast. I know I like it, and my wife hates it because I'm watching football for 15, 16 hours on Saturdays. But,
well, I'm in line for a nap this afternoon. All I know is I'm too doggone old to be staying up and watching football all day and then going to a game at, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. So I'm going to be taking a nap this afternoon, and then I'll be heading over to the stadium.
Well, there's some good games you'll be missing during that nap, but I'm sure you'll catch up. Neil Welk, thank you for joining us again today. We'll talk to you later in the season.
Hey, appreciate the time, always. Thank you.
Okay, one of the biggest games this week has got to be, it's a playoff elimination game between USC and Notre Dame, because with two losses, it's going to be hard to get there. One of the biggest games of the week. We're joined now by Ryan Abraham. Ryan, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. I think that's a good way to put it. Playoff elimination game. Both these teams still have aspirations to make the college football playoff, but they have to win this game, like you said.
Well, when you look at Sam Darnold and the USC offense, what do they have to do against this Notre Dame defense that, by all looks, kind of shut down Georgia? Because Georgia's been high-powered all year. They had Georgia at home. You're going to South Bend. What's it going to look like for that offense against that Notre Dame defense?
You know, we want to make it look like it's looked like last year, I guess you could say. If you watch the second half of the Utah game, they had those three long drives, 88 yards plus, all of them. And Sam Darnold looked like the Sam Darnold we saw from last year, where when a play breaks down, he gets outside the pocket and he's able to make something happen. He uses his legs to get away from the rush, his vision to find somebody downfield for a chunk play, and he can make that happen. And I think they mixed that in with a really solid run game with Ronald Jones. It looked a lot like what we saw last year when they were on that 9-game winning streak. The first half of the season for USC, it just really hasn't looked like that. Just a little clunky, kind of plays out of a grab bag, I guess you could say. So I think if USC can get back to what they were doing last year, play the way they did the last time you saw them in the second half of the Utah game, I think they'll have good success against this Notre Dame defense.
Now, let's flip the field now with USC on defense. You know, Notre Dame hasn't been, like, lighting it up on the scoreboard, but they do have some talent on that side of the ball. What does USC have to do on defense?
I think really stopping the run is the number one aspect for USC this weekend. They've gotten beaten up by some of the bruising running teams, even like Western Michigan in the opener. You know, we saw Utah be able to run the football. Texas, I think there's some teams that have big running backs, and you look at Josh Adams, he's like a dark horse for the Heisman for Notre Dame. They got some other backs too, and Brandon Winbush certainly is a threat to run at the quarterback spot. So I think really trying to stop the run, they'll probably play a lot of man stuff. They'll probably put their corners on islands and try to bring up as many guys as possible with some different blitzes and some different fronts and do some stunts and things like that to do whatever they can to kind of disrupt this Notre Dame rush offense. But they've, you know, had a propensity for giving up some big running plays, that, you know, playing like a guy like Bryce Love at Stanford, of course, he was able to run the football fairly effectively. So I think they're going to have to do whatever they can to limit Winbush and both Winbush and Adams from running over them. If they get to run the ball at will, it's going to really be a long day for USC.
Now, give me, like, your three keys to the game for USC.
Okay, so I would say going into it, they have to build the momentum that they had from last year. Notre Dame's got a lot of kind of off-the-field advantages. They've had a bye week. They don't have any class this week because it's their fall break. They're going to be fired up and ready for this game. USC doesn't have any byes, but they have to use that to their advantage because of how well they played in the second half of Utah. So kind of carry that over. If they were able to do that, I think that's a key. Like I talked about, stopping the run, I just can't give up 50-yard runs to Josh Adams when he's back there. I think if Notre Dame can control the offensive line of scrimmage, it's really going to be hard for USC to do well. And I think on the special team side, I think neither team has been really effective. USC's really been below average as far as special teams go. Get something positive going on special teams, I think, would be a real key. And I'll give you one more, just the turnover battle. USC's been horrible as far as turning the ball over. They're, I think, fourth from the bottom in the country, the number of turnovers, but they've been really good at not allowing points off those turnovers. And Notre Dame's been the exact opposite. They're really good in the turnover margin, and they score touchdowns after turnovers. So if USC turns the ball over, that's okay. They just can't give up touchdowns, and that's what Notre Dame does really well.
Well, it is Notre Dame week, and this week, two of the most famous players from a Notre Dame-USC game, Reggie Bush and Leinart, both saying that Sam Darnold should stay in school. What do you think?
Yeah, I watched that on the Cowherd show, and I think the way he's been playing right now, I kind of agree with it. I was actually at USC practice yesterday talking with Notre Dame color commentator Doug Flutie about him, and kind of similar players. I mean, obviously, Flutie's not as big as him, but instinctual players, players that have a lot of creativity, and that's him. And I think there's a rawness to his game. What makes him special is that creativity. It's not someone that came through these quarterback academies that's precision and scientific. He's more of a kind of back of the envelope, backyard sort of player. So I think he could use another, you know, several hundred throws in college next year to come back. Now, if he goes on a crazy run and is going to be the overall number one pick, I think he should go. But the way he's kind of been playing now, if it's kind of similar to that, it would probably help him to come back for another year and kind of blossom some of that creativity.
You see him all the time. Where would you rank him in the nation right now?
I mean, as far as like on talent, I mean, he's up there, but like Josh Rosen is really special. I still think he's the best quarterback prospect I've seen out there. But they're very different. I mean, he's definitely more calculated. We saw a lot of his heart in that comeback against Texas A&M. But just the way the NFL is kind of going, having a guy that has that instinctual knowledge of Sam Darnold, I think there's, you know, it just depends which team would like him. I mean, I think different teams would like different guys. I think overall prototypical, though, I would probably go with Josh Rosen. He seems like the number one guy to me.
Let's just hope neither one of them go to Cleveland, because that is quarterback graveyard right there. Well, Ryan Abraham.
Yeah, no, we don't wish that on anybody.
No, don't wish that on anybody. Ryan Abraham, enjoy your time in South Bend, and we'll talk to you soon.
That sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Now, when we come back, we'll have the biggest game of the week. Not arguably, not possibly, it is the biggest game of the week. That has to be Michigan and Penn State under the lights in Happy Valley. We'll talk about that with the writers from both schools when we come back right here on the University of Fish. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Now, the biggest game of the week has to be the Big Ten matchup. Michigan traveling to Happy Valley to take on Penn State. And if we're talking Michigan, that means we got to be talking to the angel of the big house, Angelique Shengelis, who is now almost a fully tenured professor here on the University of Fish. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, Professor. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. I took a little fall recess last week, didn't have a show, but we're back in full force. I didn't want to do a show last week because I didn't want to center it on OU Texas, because everybody thinks I'm an OU homer as it is, so I didn't do that. But
what do you mean you're not? Aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Well, so they're not wrong, but okay.
I mean, it's, you know, as they always say, it's hard to be humble when you're a Sooner.
Well, it's okay. It's your program. You're allowed to support it. No problem.
Exactly. But let's talk about this game later on tonight. It's going to be a whiteout. I've already talked to other people that I know you can't wear white in the press box. At least Penn State people can't wear white in the press box. So, whiteout, Happy Valley, under the lights, 100,000 plus. What are the three things, other than just finally move the ball, that does Michigan have to do on offense against his Penn State defense?
Wow, three things. I think 1, 2, and 3 is John O'Korn can't lose the ball. No turnovers from John O'Korn. And number two, he has to make some completions. I don't think anyone's asking him to, you know, have an amazing game. Just something better than 58 yards passing. And completing half of his passes like he did last week at Indiana. Now, I mean, he spoke to media this week and said he didn't want to say he was the game manager, but he said he managed the game well. He didn't have any turnovers, but that's just not enough. Not for this game. And number three is they've got to run the ball effectively again. And I think that ties into the offensive line run blocking well. And I thought they did a pretty good job last week. They had 271 rushing yards, but to me, I mean, the key is absolutely John O'Korn. So that's 1, 2, and 3 for you.
That is 1, 2, and 3. Now, when you look at the Penn State offense, everybody knows McSorley. Everybody knows Saquon Barkley. Barkley has not been getting the, well, running back yards. He's been getting the all-purpose yards, but he hasn't been getting the rushing yards that everybody expected him to get this year. What does the Michigan defense have to do to make sure it stays that way?
Well, I mean, they had success against Barkley last year, too, in Ann Arbor and different defensive line, but the same guys, too. Those are these guys starting now are the guys backing up that front group last year. And so they have an idea how to play Saquon Barkley. And boy, they couldn't say enough about him this week. I mean, Maurice Hurst and Chase Winovich talking about Barkley. But Winovich said, look, he's not the only guy on this offense. I mean, they have other players. They have good receivers. And they have a great quarterback. But what I think is critical is that Tennessee line is just okay. And they've started three different guys at right tackle this year already. And I think that Michigan probably feels like it has a matchup advantage there. So if they've got that, now they've got to get to Barkley. They've got to follow him up. But he's also effective as a receiver out of the backfield. Like you said, he gets his all-purpose yard. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to be concerned with when you're trying to defend Saquon Barkley. But I think this plays into Michigan's wheelhouse on defense. I mean, they do stop the run well, and they're a great third down defense. So I think they feel pretty confident going into this one about how to defend Barkley and even Trace McSorley as well, the quarterback.
Okay, so lights are going out at Happy Valley later tonight. Who do you think wins it?
I'm not Penn State winning it. I think it'll be a close one. I really do. I think the point spread is too big. And some people say, well, I mean, it's at Beaver Stadium, it's the White House, that counts for, you know, 7 points. And it counts for something. There's no doubt about it. I mean, that press box shake, the field shake, it's crazy. But I think if John O'Korn doesn't do anything crazy, and if Michigan's defense can do well, I mean, I think that they're going to keep it close. And frankly, if it comes down to a special teams play, a kick, that is advantage Michigan. So I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but that's putting that out there. But I think Penn State will win a close game, like, you know, by 6 points, 7 points, touchdown, something like that. But I don't think double digits.
It's always games like this when someone like Donovan Peoples-Jones steps up and makes a big punt return or a kick return. It's going to be a great game, and we're going to you break down a game pretty good. We're going to have to get you on sometime as the guest picker to have you pick against me.
Oh, gosh. I've been doing such a bad job picking games for the Detroit News. But in my defense, we're all doing badly. And our picks, but we get the picks, we're supposed to do them like Tuesday, so you don't really have a chance to even like think about the matchup. So if we can do them later in the week, I will take you down in the pick.
We will do that. We'll get you on Fish's Pick sometime here really soon. Angelique Shengelis, the Angel of the Big House, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Prof. I appreciate it.
Okay, we just got through talking to the Angel of the Big House. She'll be there at Happy Valley tonight. It's going to be a wideout, so we're going to talk to someone who makes State College their home. We're talking to Matt Martell. Matt, you've been on the show a few times. Everybody knows who you are. How you doing today?
I'm great. How you doing?
Not bad, not bad. We're going to see if this week can be as crazy in college football as last week was. Hopefully it's not, because top 10 teams were falling like flies last week, and you've got one. You've got the number 2 team in the nation in Penn State right now. Now, what are the 3 things on offense that Penn State's going to have to do against this speedy Michigan defense?
Well, first and foremost, Penn State's going to have to block. Their biggest concern since the start of the season has been the right tackle position. Andrew Nelson, who has been a starting lineman for a number of years, was hurt to start the year, played a little bit. Now his status is uncertain. James Franklin doesn't really talk about injuries, but we know he's hurt. Behind him, you have Chaz Wright, who started the year as the right tackle. He has been underperforming. So this week, Penn State is looking to go with redshirt freshman Will Fries at starting right tackle. Fries has started a few games at the position, hit or miss. He's been switching in and out with Chaz Wright, but we'll see what happens. That's been the biggest area of concern for this offense all year. A lot of the running game that Penn State does is off of right tackle. And when Saquon Barkley can't get the space he needs, him, like any other running back, even though he's superhuman, is going to be brought down in the backfield or at the line of scrimmage. So that's the biggest concern to start. With Michigan's fast defense, and this gets in the second point, Penn State has to be able to pass the football. And they have to be able to pass the football set up the run for Barkley. Now, passing the football is going to be difficult with the press coverage that Michigan's secondary played. If the wide receivers can't get separation as quickly because of the in-your-face sort of defense that Michigan plays, Tracy Sorley's got to have time to throw the football and get them to get open. If the line can't protect, that's the biggest area of concern, and they all roll into each other. If Penn State can't block, they can't pass. If they can't pass, it's going to be hard to run. If you can't run, you don't win the game.
Now, flipping the field, what are the three things they got to do on defense to stop what's been a pretty pedestrian Michigan offense?
Got to stop the run. And I think that might be the most thing. And if you're asking for three things, I think you got to do all three of those. Stop the run, stop the run, stop the run. Because I'm not too concerned with Penn State's secondary defending John O'Korn. He threw for 58 yards last week. He's thrown one touchdown pass all year, which actually is the same amount of touchdown passes Saquon Barkley's thrown for, which is interesting in itself. But Penn State's defense ranks number one in string defense. They're allowed 9 points per game. I think if Penn State scores 20 points, they're going to win just based off the fact that Michigan doesn't have an offense and Penn State is the best scoring defense in the country right now.
Yeah. Now, okay, you're starting the murderer's row of your Big Ten play. You've got Michigan this week, then Ohio State at the Shoe, then Michigan State. Do you come out unscathed?
No.
Okay.
No, Penn State will not come out unscathed. I'm not sure which one of the final two games Penn State will lose, just because I think they win this week. And the next 2 weeks are the biggest challenge after this week. Ohio State is the biggest one. But the thing is, Penn State was good. I guess right away was Ohio State. They won that game. This year, the biggest opponent, I think, still is Ohio State. You're playing them in the Horseshoe, but I think Ohio State will win that game, but I'm not counting Penn State out completely. But if Penn State beats Ohio State, the Michigan State game is hangover game written all over it. A team that's not as experienced in Michigan State, but one that's talented and one that beat Michigan a few weeks ago. If Penn State gears up for this one against Michigan and next week against Ohio State wins them both, I think they drop to Michigan State at that point if they beat Ohio State. So the final two games of the stretch are the ones that concern me.
It's going to be an interesting stretch there for Penn State. It's going to be a wideout tonight. But when we come back, I'm going to hold you over, because when we come back, we're going to pick the games. We're going to find out. You've already told us you think that Penn State's going to win, but we're going to find out if you think that Penn State's going to win against the spread. We'll do that when we come back here on the University of Fish. I am the professor. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Welcome back. It's that time of the week, the time everybody waits for. It's Fish's Picks, where I give you what I think are the biggest games of the week. Some of them not so big, but it's kind of hard to find 10 good games each week, but I do my best for you. And like I've always said, if you're losing money, don't come yelling at me, because my wife already yells at me because of me doing it. But if you listen to me, you're making money this year. And we're joined once again by Matt Martell from State College, Pennsylvania. Matt, are you ready to do this?
Yes, I am. As ready as I'll ever be.
Okay, we're going to start off with Oklahoma at Kansas State. Oklahoma giving up 14 points, coming off the Red River rivalry win. It's so much easier when they called it the Red River Shootout. It wasn't so alliterative, and you didn't get tongue-tied with it. But the whole shootout, everybody's all gun-scared now. So you can't call it that, but it's the Red River rivalry. They're now taking on Kansas State, a team that knows Oklahoma very well, because when Bob Stoops went to Oklahoma, he took a lot of former K-State assistants with him. They're in Manhattan. The old man, the wizard of Manhattan, Bill Snyder, against Oklahoma. How do you see this one?
I see it. I got Oklahoma, you know, with the spread. The problem is, I think it'll be make people betting on this game nervous, because I don't think Oklahoma pulls ahead by the 14 points until later in the third, fourth quarter.
Okay, I got to go with Oklahoma as well. When I saw that putrid showing that K-State had against Vanderbilt earlier this year, And Vanderbilt's not what was advertised earlier in the season. So Oklahoma will win this one going away. I have been part of a game. Well, actually, I was in the stands. So you can call me a part of the game when Oklahoma beat them 52-10 in Manhattan. It's not going to be like that, but give up the 14 and take Oklahoma. Now, Colorado, got to go with a local team. The Colorado Buffaloes traveling to Washington State, who just got spanked by Cal, 37-7 in Berkeley. They're going to be in Pullman for this one. Washington State giving up 10.5. Is that too many points after last week?
Yeah, I think it is. I think Colorado's going to, you know, keep it close. I don't know if I'm as high on Wash State as, you know, people thought. You know, people were jumping on that bandwagon when they were getting in the top 10. They were undefeated, things like that. Last week's match against Cal kind of made me second guess those thoughts, and I'm going to go Colorado is going to cover the spread.
I have to say, I was on the Washington State bandwagon early in the season. I had them ranked pretty high in my top 25 and thought that they would really be a challenge in the Pac-12 North. They're still going to be, because it's still going to come down to the Apple Cup, to who wins the Pac-12 North. The 10.5, I think that you don't have two performances from Luke Falk like you did last week. He's not going to have another one consecutively. Washington State will pull away in this game, give up the 10.5, take the Cougs. Now, everybody's been asking me all year, Bama's number one in the nation. Why don't you talk about them? Because they haven't played anybody. They're not playing anybody this week again, but I threw them in just for all the people who were asking. Tennessee at Alabama. The only reason Butch Jones still has a job is that the AD at Tennessee doesn't want to put an interim tag on someone and make them play Alabama. That's my thought. But Alabama giving up 36 in Tuscaloosa to Tennessee. Does Tennessee keep it within 36?
No. Bama's got this one. Butch Jones, that has been a wreck. This year specifically, it's not going to be close. You're looking at 30 points by halftime. Bama rolls this one.
I'm seeing this as a 63-3 game possibly, because Tennessee hasn't scored a touchdown since the Florida game. And so I don't see it happening this week against that Bama defense. Give up the 36. I never tell someone to give up 36 and still go with the favorite, but take Alabama. This one's going to be a blowout. A little better game. Syracuse coming in off of that huge upset of Clemson last week at the Carrier Dome. Now go to Southern Florida to take on Miami. They're not in Coral Gables anymore. The school's still there, but the stadium's not. Miami, the Hurricane, undefeated, the only undefeated team in the ACC, giving up 16.5 at home. How do you like it? Orange or Hurricane?
The U is back. I'm telling you right now, it's going to be a 3-touchdown game. The U is back, and I don't think they're getting the love they deserve. The only undefeated Power 5 team not ranked in the top 6 teams in the AP poll. I'm going the U. I think they're for real.
Well, when you look at the U, they haven't been overly impressive wins. They've been very close wins, like last week against Georgia Tech. The Florida State game was close.
That's what you need to do.
I know you got to win the close ones.
Pull out the close ones, yes, sir.
But you also need to show some style points if you're going to try to get up there. They're getting their swag back. They've got the big gold chain that they get when they get a turnover. 16.5. Syracuse, you know, they're still riding high. I think they're going to get knocked back down to where the Orange should be this week by Miami. So give it to Miami, giving up the 16.5. Now, these next games are a bit more competitive. I'm going to skip ahead into the list. We're going to come back, though. Kentucky at Mississippi State. Sounds like a dog game, but both teams are playing pretty well this year. Kentucky has not won a game by more than 11 points this year, but they're traveling to Stark Vegas, the Bulldogs, or the boys from Lexington. How do you like this one?
Kentucky's got it's going to be a 3-7 point game. I don't think, like you said, both teams are starting to play better. I don't see either team pulling away from this one.
So you're going to take Kentucky then?
Oh, yes, yes. I'm taking Kentucky. I don't know if I'm taking Kentucky outright, but Kentucky will, you know, do fine against the spread.
You know, 10 points in Stark Vegas, that's a lot of points, but Starkville is a fun place to play. I think Mississippi State, I think the Bulldogs are going to pull this one out, by more than 10. So I would say take Mississippi State, giving up the 10 points. I don't know why I'm going all favorites right now. We'll have to see if that stays, if I stick with that. Next, we've got Oklahoma State giving up 7 points in Austin. Texas coming off of that loss to Oklahoma. It was a close loss. So do they bounce back and get a win against even a more dynamic offense in Oklahoma State?
Oklahoma State's got this one. I'm going to say 2-3 touchdown win. I'm still not sold on Texas. And just, I don't know. It's a program that still needs to show me that it's back before I think that they can compete with a team like Oklahoma State in that dynamic offense.
Well, Texas is becoming moral victory U. Yeah, they, you know, they came back good against Maryland, still lost. Then they went to the double overtime game with USC, and then they had a close game with Oklahoma. Moral victories don't count on the score sheet. And so Oklahoma State is going to wipe them up at Darrell K. Royal Stadium in Austin, Texas. It's going to be embarrassing, and it's going to be the fourth loss this early in the season for Texas. Tom Herman won't be on a hot seat because they'll give him a couple years, just like they did Charlie Strong. But Texas has got to figure out something to turn the ship around. Next, we have one of the darlings of the non-Power Five, the Group of Five, that being UCF. Giving up 7.5 points in Annapolis to Navy, who just took their first loss of the season this past week at Memphis. The Midshipmen or the Knights?
I think the Midshipmen are actually going to win this game. So there's my pick right there. I think Navy's a good program, one that going into the season, I didn't see them losing more than two games this year. I don't think the two games that they will lose will be back-to-back.
Well, I've got to disagree with you again, because UCF is playing to keep Scott Frost, because Nebraska wants Scott Frost. They have started a fund in Orlando to bolster the football program. They've already got like $1.5 million guaranteed into this fund. And Scott Frost put $200,000 of his own money into this fund. And so they're playing to keep him there because everybody knows Mike Riley is going to be gone in Nebraska. You don't fire the AD to keep the coach. You don't do that. So this is the keep Scott Frost game. UCF will be the Group of Five participant in the New Year's Six games. UCF will win this by more than 2 touchdowns. I know.
Wow.
Heady thing to say. Now, kind of a dog game in the Pac-12. Oregon at UCLA. Oregon hasn't looked like anything pretty much all year, but as soon as their quarterback, I don't know if they call him Herbert or A-Bear. If he's in Louisiana, I know it'd be A-Bear. But Oregon getting 6.5 at the Rose Bowl, taking on the Bruins. Ducks or Bruins?
Bruins. Realistically, I have no reason to say one way or another. I don't have really any thought this game. I don't think it's well played. I think the Bruins will win by a touchdown.
Okay, and they're giving up 6.5, so a touchdown will win it for you.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with you. I think the Rosen one has a great game against us because Nebraska was able to move the ball against Oregon, and so Rosen's going to tear them up by at least a couple touchdowns. So take the Bruins, giving up the 6.5. Now that leaves us the two biggest games of the year, both of them, well, for three teams of the next two games, it's a playoff elimination game. And so we got USC going to Notre Dame. Notre Dame giving up the 3.5. You figure that's a home field advantage because you figure home field's worth a field goal. Trojans or the Fighting Irish?
Fighting Irish. And I'm just looking at, I don't know who USC is right now. I don't know what Sam Darnold is right now this season. I'm not sold on the Trojans. I don't know if I was ever, but they definitely have not impressed me this year. They don't have an identity yet. It was Darnold, but he has not performed. I like the Irish.
Well, I was talking to Ryan Abraham earlier in the show. He's a writer for USC, and he's not real sure who the who USC is right now. And because, you know, he's saying that Darnold needs to come back next year, get another few hundred throws in college ball before he tries to take it on to the pros. I really hate being a Notre Dame believer, and I'm not really yet. I have more faith in them because of the close game with Georgia than I do with USC, because I saw what Utah was able to do to them on offense last week. So I'm taking the Irish as well, giving up the 3.5. That brings us to the game you'll be at this evening. The nation will be watching Michigan, Penn State, under the lights there in Happy Valley. It's going to be a whiteout. I'm sure you're going to be wearing white.
Actually, I can't be in the press box, but I might wear some white socks.
There you go.
I got Penn State winning by, on my official in the newspaper at Penn State, the Daily Collegiate, in that I have them winning 31-10. And they'll cover the spread for sure. It's just a question of whether or not Penn State will get the offense rolling in time to score 31, but I think they can do it. I think that this is the game that they all come together and start rolling to try to get on the ball for next week.
Okay, now I have to disagree with you again. I don't think that I'm not sure if Michigan will win the game outright. I think their defense will keep them in it to the 9.5 will come into play. Take the Wolverines. Sorry to go against your team. I mean, I'm not going against your team. I would bet against them, but I'm not going against them. Does that make sense?
Oh, very fair. I think the Beaver Stadium whiteout crowd is going to be rocking.
It is going to be. You're going to have 110,000 people there. It'll be crazy. Matt Martell, the Daily Collegian from Penn State, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to wrap up this week on University of Fish, but don't worry, we'll be back next week. Hopefully, we'll have another crazy week with top 10 teams falling left and right. We'll have to see what happens. But coming up next, the other football show with Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden right here on Extra Sports 1300. I'm the professor. Class dismissed.